Welcome to part two of Jet Revisited on the GladPod. If you are listening to this episode first, if you stumbled upon this and you're about to listen to it, please stop. Stop right now. Go back and listen to part one first. That was also released today. So you go and listen to that. And then for those of you who have done, just like me right now, we can sit back, relax, and enjoy this second installment of Jet Revisited.
Contenders, ready! Gladiators, ready! 3, 2, 1! The
Gladiators! So, Di, something you mentioned a bit earlier on was that, you know, your brother, dad, you know, music is very much part of your life. You know, you said that you can still play the flute now, but according to producer Paul's notes, you played the recorder, the triangle, which I'm not sure is technically playing a musical instrument because it is just a triangle. The violin as well. And you were part of, you know, choirs and orchestras. You have got already that musical background, and you spoke quite a bit about it earlier on. You've even been able to sort of hear the music and put a dance to it as well. But what I wanted to ask you about was that debut album, No Covers. How did it come about?
You two are cruel. Muff Murphin, who wrote the theme tune for GLADS and all the incidental music for GLADS, had a recording studio out in Somerset, Worcestershire area. Sorry, Worcester, not near the Malverns, so Worcester area. And he was lovely. What a really great guy. Jingles man, he called himself. Just, and a really good friend of Nigel and Kenny's as well, I think, had worked together over the years on and off for various other ITV productions. And Nigel was like, you can sing. I'm like, no, I can't. You can sing. No, I can't. You're going to sing. let's do an album. I'm like, no, that's for proper singers and proper musical artists. And I can't sing. I can sing in a group and I can sing core work and harmony work because I love singing with other people, but not solo. Having said that, though, I think the opportunity to do an album was a bit of a dream. I think most people would, you know, sell their granny for something like that. So I did embrace it. I was a little bit resentful at the time because I didn't feel ready. I didn't feel like I could sing. And yeah, and I actually wrote one of the tracks, which is I Don't Know. And I still to this day, I like that one though.
Is that your favourite one from that album then?
Yeah, I wrote it really quickly, just one evening. It was actually based on a breakup with my first long-term partner. Yeah, I think quite often songs, and it's cheesy as, my gosh, really cheesy. But I enjoyed doing it. We did a really good video to it as well. I love filming that. And I used some of my favourite dancers from the Bodywork Studios, which is where our lovely late Caroline Flack also trained. Louis Spence was in it, and I think it was Louis in it. I can't remember. But yeah, we had some really good dancers. I choreographed it all, produced it all. And it was a privilege, an absolute privilege to do. And that was my track, the one and only track I've ever written.
Well, I was going to say, because that single was released in November 94 and it reached 100, according to the official charts company. And it's good as well that it was your favourite track, because there obviously wasn't a second single released off the back of it. Do you know if there were plans to release another single off the back of it? It was kind of like, let's see how this first one does. Okay, it's reached 100. Let's retreat. Let's pour up the drawbridge.
And Nigel, in all his wisdom, bless him, I think he meant well. I was saying no from the beginning. No, no, no. Don't mind being part of producing something visual because choreography was my backbone. But to have to be the front person, no.
Well, just before we move on as well, Di, there have been a few fan requests for like a vinyl release. That would be epic.
Okay, I'll take that. No, you don't want to go anywhere near that, any of you listening. Please, no.
I would encourage everyone listening to go and listen to it. And we will make the music video available on all platforms for you to enjoy as you're listening to this. At the end of it, go and check it out.
I was thinking we need a whole other episode of going through those 9 tracks of the album to like really find out, like, yeah, go through them track by track.
That would be abuse. I'd have to report you guys. I'd have to have a therapist waiting at the door or somebody with a stretcher just to like get me from going crazy. I would not put that on anybody.
I don't know what you want me to be. I can't live my life through you. I don't know what you want me to be. Now, you cannot possibly have a Glad Pod episode without the Oracle, Paul Noddings, pulling out some of his memorable moments / events that most gladiators that we've spoken to, or even contenders, I'm sure there will be at one stage someone that doesn't even remember these events or being part of them at all, just as Paul's knowledge is far superior to anyone's, even people that were actually there. There's a long list that you've got of memorable events for Dive.
Yeah, no, definitely. I had a lot of fun going back through the archives to pull out some clips that I thought were my personal kind of memorable moments of Diane's. The first being a game that I think you only ever played it twice, actually, which was Tilt, which was the tug of war on the platforms. You were facing, the producers thought it'd be a really good idea to put you against Helen Williams, who was a 13 stone power lifter. At the time you were, I think, around 9 stone. So yeah, I was like just wondering, what were the producers thinking? It was so unusual to see you on this event, never mind against somebody who was a 13 stone power lifter. Yeah, what did you think when you were stood up on that platform, or when you found that slip of paper saying that, right, today you're going to be playing Tilt?
You bastard. With the lot of you, what are you thinking in the box? Sat there in the little box doing camera edits. Yeah, we'll stick Jet against this powerlifter on Tilt. Do you know what? Yeah, I wasn't happy, but I'd been given some great events, and I was thankfully quite naturally good at some of them, but that just got me. And I knew that it literally came to go with something like that, it would just come down to tactics. So as long as you could get your tilt back really, really quick and just hold on for everything, then you might stand a chance. So yeah, I probably was beaten badly a lot.
Well, on the first, because obviously you had two bulls on it. So first pull went, I think, as everybody predicted, where she pulled her off quite easily. However, the second bull, you stayed up there. And I think it was probably one of the first performances I watched as a kid where it was almost like role reversal. It was almost like the gladiator was the power lifter and you were the contender. And you were like, I remember willing everything, like, hold on, Jet, like shouting at the TV. And you did. And yeah, it just felt like such a different performance. It was like you were literally, I think everybody would have been willing you to kind of hold on there and win it. So yeah, that was kind of one of my standout performances for you.
Thank you. And it's probably everybody willing me, probably did the magic, because there's no reason technically why I would have ever been able to stand on my own or hold my own on that event against somebody a lot bigger, a lot stronger, had I not just managed to just dig deep. So thank you everybody for making it not the complete disaster it could have been.
Next up, our power lifter, and all the eggs are in her basket. Superior body weight and the bottom table.
Next up on Tilt, it's Helen. And she's facing Jet. Over to John Anderson.
And Jet, although the same height, is actually giving away over 1.5 stone in weight.
3, 2, 1.
Oh, Jet gets the table back this time. And how is Jet managing to hold her? Sheer determination. She's outgunned and outnumbered up there. Super glue on her feet. Yes. 2 points.
She's so much smaller than me, for goodness sake, and to put up a fight like that, I don't know how she does it. She's brilliant.
And just before I move on to my next favourite moment, I thought, as usual, I've been in touch with our stat man, Daryl Ryan, who has amazing stats on the show, to just cover how many of the actual events you played. So out of the 27 games, which obviously not all of them were around during your kind of gladiator's career, you played 13 of them, which is roughly half, obviously not including the eliminators, so that's great. You appeared in 66 episodes, including the domestics, international and specials, in all 4 sets of the live shows. Throughout those 66 episodes, you had 133 battles with a 75% win rate.
So you won 60, drew 10, and only lost 17.
3, 2, 1.
Both girls want to put as much wall between themselves and the gladiators in their 10-second head start. Erica knows she's got a job in her hands. Jet has never been beaten on this wall, and here comes trouble.
So yeah, second kind of memory was, again, an event that you weren't on very often. I think 4 times you played it. Duel, which was in Series 1, and you were facing Lisa Morgan. And you were up there. Again, it was an unusual event to see you on, but obviously first series, it was something that was great. And I think that's one thing about the UK series is what stood it against all of the others is that they did mix and match the gladiators around, and that is what the fans absolutely loved. So you were up there against Lisa, who, from looking at the videos, you were actually up against in the gladiators tryouts as well. So I don't know if you can remember, she had really short blonde curly hair on the top, really nice lady. So yeah, you were, I suppose, a 50-50 battle between the two of you. She nearly had you off. You turned around, nearly falling off the platform, with an absolutely amazing backhander. Bosh, whacked her, and she was off. And you were absolutely jumping for joy on that platform.
I'm so relieved. It's such an iconic event. It's just like you are really quite naked up there. All you've got is your pugil stick and a whole load of strength and tenacity. And you just want that. Was it a minute on those events? I think it was, wasn't it? You had a whole minute to kind of destabilize and prove yourself. Hopefully, because I wasn't that big and strong compared to a lot of our wonderful contenders, I'd often just had to use a bit of thinking, right, if they're going to do a huge, at some point, they're going to be destabilizing themselves. So if I can just wait, dodge it, and then get behind wherever they're going. That was my tactic up there completely. But yeah, I was so nervous for it. One thing I really enjoyed, though, was being able to take, because the crash helmets were the solid ones, like motorcycle helmets, I could take it off and I could do a huge kind of like Birani dismount off the top of that podium, because it's still a 20-odd foot drop. But I love that bit. I love being able to just use my gymnastics to sort of make it look like I wasn't just plop, dropping off and hurting my ankle. Because the nice thing about doing a Birani dismount onto a crash mat from that height, you can use the roll, the inertia, and to break the fall. Because a lot of the accidents on glads were from the high falls. And if you landed on a part of your body incorrectly, it was probably going to go. So yeah, it was a nice opportunity just to do a Birani for me. And it would have meant, it's over, it's over, it's over. Please don't put me on that again. Please don't put me on that again. Give me hang tough any day.
I was going to say, was there any events that you particularly dreaded being like assigned?
Yeah, Jewel. It was really that one. Yeah, I never got a chance to do swing shot. Well, I'd love to have done that one because it looked like really good fun. But again, at the very beginning of the whole series, I'd got turned one of my ankles, which I've done on and off over my life. And when it goes, it's a bad injury. It's not a stable part of my body, even to this day. I actually turned it a few months ago on a run, and it's only just kind of starting to recover now. So yeah, so anything that involved very pugilistic work and powerball, I didn't initially like it, but then we started looking more at tactics, and I think there was myself, Suzanne, Vogue, and Kim. I think we once started learning how to kind of completely block a contender from scoring, and we'd have, yeah, I started to really enjoy that one because it was the only one really where we could work as a team. But apart from that, no, just duel.
A flying tackle from Jet takes her out on this occasion, carrying in for another two. Lightning fly over the top of Life Changes, and Nikki, it's all over. Poor old Nikki, ridden roughshod by the gladiators for her 2 points. Heavy tackles.
What about Skytrack? Because the first time you actually tried it was actually during competition. I think it was show 5 in series 2. So it's against Jackie Thompson. So you missed the training rehearsal for it in the morning because you were having, you know, an injury on your back sorted. So then you lost quite easily. But then you came back next time with a quite, I would say, a solid win after some kind of major adjustments to your harness. And I would say probably a bit of practice. Do you think it was a bit weird how health and safety would allow you to go on it with no training?
Yeah, but that was the way. That was the way. Yeah. And you kind of like were suspended from a metal umbilical cord right up, tight up against the piece of apparatus itself. And of course, if you just happen to be that much further away from being able to power yourself upside down, then you're not going to get any purchase. And so we hadn't had a chance to have a go. And the court, it was just way too long. So I could literally only be tickling Skytrack itself and thinking, gosh, I'm going to need to be much, much closer. So like on a really heavy crawl. But of course, you just got this like overwhelming sense of gravity. Everything is being pulled earthwards. So it was actually quite a hard event to do, because the length of time it would take for you to go up and be rigged, and then they'd heighten the whole thing as well. You're hanging forever. So your sternocleidomastoid, which is the longest spelt muscle in the body, but it's this big muscle here down the front of the neck. Head's a heavy thing. You know, you're knackered, basically. So by the time it even comes to 3, 2, 1, we're all up there going, oh my God, just get me down. So I wasn't a big fan of Skytrack, but once I'd got the metal umbilical cord really close to the actual Skytrack itself, it became a lot easier. And it was like chasies, like a proper game of chasies. I remember when you couldn't get chased upstairs. It was like that.
So while the contenders and the gladiators are sorting themselves out, let's hand you over to John Sachs to explain the rules. Over to you, John.
Thanks, Fash. The girls are getting their safety equipment on, ready to be attached 40 feet up in the air to the Skytrack for our high-speed aerial chase. Let's take a look at Lightning, our gymnastic gold medalist. She'll be attempting to strike the detonator of Lisa. While Jet will be in hot pursuit of Jackie. Hey,
Gladiators ready!
There's the detonator. The gladiators will attempt to strike.
3, 2, 1.
Oh, Jet a little previous on that start, but the ref's letting it go. Look at Lightning accelerating. It's like she's gone into another gear. Lightning doesn't want to make any mistakes. Waits for Lisa to slow down as she goes into the bend. And takes her out. Well, now it's all about Jet and Jackie. And it looks like Jet's running out of fuel. She doesn't look comfortable up there. And now she's not even using her legs. Jackie's going to take the checkered flag. She's left the jet in her jet stream. Yes, 10 points.
When new events were introduced, I remember going to the recordings and seeing Pyramid for the first time being set up and just being like, what is that? I don't understand. What is it, a new entrance? Is it, what is it? And it was a new event, obviously. How did the producers like present the new games to you? And was there any that kind of presented you and you're like, what the is this?
The producers presented it as via the riggers. So a lot of the riggers and the crew were kind of put onto the events to dummy run them for us. Because, some of the events that were being constructed hadn't physically been done much before, even by the American show. I mean, yeah, Pyramid had been done by the Americans. It also was the one with the biggest kind of accident rate. It's the one eventually that took me out of the show as well. So I had a big respect for Pyramid, but it was odd. It was lovely. And the thing is, each step of the Pyramid is like a metre tall. So if you had really good hip mobility and long hamstrings, you could kind of bound up and down it really easily. And Kim, Lightning and I are sort of slightly smaller end of the girls. So we kind of are sort of bounded up and down it. We all had our own techniques, I guess. But John Anderson was quite keen for that event to have a lot of what we call air time. So when you're doing a double tackle all the way down, they liked it when you actually got away from the pyramid and were falling through the air. So it was literally car crash TV. And the other one that I wasn't impressed with, and still to this day I've got a bit of an issue with, was Polax. I thought, what the crikey hell is that? And I was in a rehearsal on it. Of course, it's like a 1-1000, 2-1000, 3-1000, about a 3-second fall from the top of it. It's a long fall. And you had to do a stunt person's fall. If you didn't keep your body tight when you hit the airbag, then everything folds in on yourself. And I hadn't kept my body tight when I hit the airbag, so my knees literally went into my face and I broke my nose. I walked off the crash mat and my nose was across my face. I'd heard the crack. I could see my nose out of my left eye. And it was Kate Zodiac, who went on to have a horrible accident on the same event on Polax. She came crawling onto the airbed because they heard me scream. I just looked at her and I went, please, Kate, tell me my nose isn't broken. She went, Jet, your nose is broken. I wasn't bleeding or anything. My nose was over. What happened? I think the soft tissue had moved over my face. As the swelling came down, it pulled it back again. But I had this like really strange kind of Neanderthalian kind of forehead look going on for a few days. And I think it was Mickey Snakehips Cobra said to me, he said, God, you look actually really attractive like that. I'm like, what? And he said, just keep it, keep that look. I'm like, I've got a broken nose, Mickey. What are you on about? So I think, yeah, it was one of the many injuries. I wasn't a fan. Didn't like Polax.
Hi, it's Jet and Zodiac here. We've just popped into the Birmingham International Arena. And as you can hear, it's to watch our international friends training here. We've all got the same events, but there's few events that we have that they don't have, so.
Yeah, well, there's one in particular which is standing behind us, and that's Polax. And boy, are we looking forward to seeing them try that later on this afternoon, because you know how we felt when we had a go.
This is Sabre from the American Gladiators, kicking it in Birmingham, England. Birmingham, as they say. That's Polax, 40 feet of steel and metal and spinning cylinders. Never done it before. A little nervous, but it don't matter. This is Gladiator Arena right here, and I'm a king in Gladiator Arena, so that means that I'm going to conquer whatever's in front of me. I promise.
I'm not sure if you'll be able to answer this or if you kept up to date with the events that came after you'd left the show, but a very common question that gets asked by the fans is, are there any events that came after you that you wish you could have had a go at?
I don't know. What event do you think? Do you both, having looked at the events that came afterwards, would you like to have seen me on? Play fair.
There was a game called Vertigo, which was basically these five poles and you had to climb up and you had to sway to get from one pole to the next pole. And it was a race with a contender to see who could get across these five poles to this hanging kind of metal circle at the end. And I think you would have been superb on that one because it was kind of obviously aerial up in the air and was quite kind of fluid with the body and stuff. So I think you would have been amazing on Vertigo, really.
Thank you. I'd have loved to. Actually, now you've reminded me of it. Yes, I did see some footage of it. It reminds me of Flying Daggers, you know, the beautiful oriental films where there's these amazing, beautiful aerial fight scenes where they're going through like bamboo forests and doing something very similar. So that's where my mind went right then. Yeah, I'd have loved to have done that.
And we obviously can't end a chat about the events without discussing Hang Tough, which is probably the event that you were most known for. Let me just bring up some stats on that. So you played Hang Tough 27 times. You won 22 times. You had 4 draws and 1 loss. And the 1 loss that you had, I don't know if you remember, was probably the last time that you ever played it, which was during International Gladiators against American contender Peggy Ordita, who was obviously a fantastic contender. So if you were going to lose to anybody, Peggy Ordita was the person.
One of the American Gladiators, Ice, Laurie Petrick, she came up to me, she said, you think you're the queen of Hang Tough over here? She said, I've just got one name for you. She didn't quite say it that way, but Peggy Ordita. Remember her name. She will whoop your butt. And I was like, yeah, right. She was right. Peggy Ordita was incredible. Brilliant contender.
Next up for the contenders from the USA, Peggy Ordita. And she squares off against Jet.
A firm favourite from the UK. Looking at her facts and figure, the flag-flying Jet stands 2 inches shorter than Peggy and nearly 2 stones lighter.
Let's see if Jet's got the power over to international referee John Anderson.
Contender ready! And he's up!
Jet clearly aware that she's got her work cut out against Peggy. Oh, and Peggy in the scoring zone already. And Jet working out her strategy. Jet traversing.
She's going to trap Peggy on the swing. Here she comes. Oh, gotcha, no! Peggy slipped the scissors. Peggy regrouping. Now she's flying in the face of Jet. Jet's one ring. Peggy going for the platform. Can't control it. Jet marking her well. Oh, she's gone! Peggy lets the ring and the point slip through her fingers, and she is furious with herself. What a letdown for Peggy. Her supporters are miserable.
I don't know if you've got any other memories of Hang Tough, but there was one more that I wanted to cover with you, which was basically against everybody's favourite contender, Eunice Huthart, again during International Gladiators. So you caught her in this particular outing, but you slipped down her body and fell off. I've heard Eunice admit since that she might have cheekily greased her body a little bit beforehand. Did you realise that at the time? Because obviously it was an international competition, so UK Gladiator versus UK Contender was something that they probably didn't do very often. So were you aware that she'd done that and that's what had happened?
No, I remember slipping down her body and I remember thinking, shall I take the pants with me? That did come into my mind, but I thought that's really rotten. But it literally would have been the only thing I could have hung on to once my grip was going and I was sliding down her body. I think she must have had welts with my fingers through, you know, sort of welting down her poor body, which for some contenders was the thing. She's just literally trying to grab purchase on anything. She was slippy, yeah. But I thought, the pants are coming with me. I thought, I can't do it to her.
And Jet traversing beautifully towards Eunice. Effectively cutting Eunice off. And Eunice has got her back to Jet. Mistake number one. And right there is mistake number two. Jet's got that scissors locked. Look out. Whoa! Jet losing her grip and down she goes! And Eunice can't believe it.
Was there any other like memorable moments that particularly stand out to you as your time on as Jet?
I think the dismounts from some of the podiums, like I mentioned on Duel that time. Yeah, just all the Hang Toughs. I just really, it was a very beautiful event. I was nervous. I was shaking from him. My feet were shaking so badly. No one ever sees it. But when you see my legs would kind of like counterbalance and stabilize me in the air. And it would allow me to get that much more swing and volume. So you could do the double ringing thing, which I think Kim Lightning may have invented, or one of the boys. And they said, oh, if you can get from A to B much faster, get to the contender really quick. If you do, instead of going for your next ring, which would mean you'd have to kind of slightly go across yourself, you could actually go right down the middle of the whole rig on a double ringing and get to the other side really quick. And then from that, you've got so much kind of swing going. You can pretty much go anywhere you want and navigate the rig really easily. I just loved it. I just really loved it. I used to feel sorry for the contenders because there were very few, apart from Peggy Odita, who were given chance to get any good at it. So I think Lightning and myself, being ex-gymnasts, found it quite an easy event to do just because we'd done all the years of working with that level of grip strength and feeling good with the strength of the upper body. But quite often I'd feel sorry for the contenders because they weren't really given, well, they didn't give us a good run for our money. Or when you did get one who'd give you a good run for your money, it was like, wow, yeah, I really earned that. I really earned that win this time. So yeah, Hang Tough all over, through and through. And I love the wall. I'll always love the wall.
And there's Jet relaxing after that amazing ordeal. Oh, look at that! Where's my membership form? I'm signing up for the Jet Fan Club.
We sent out a request to get a few questions from some of our listeners ahead of this. So we've got a few here. Some of them will probably be shorter than others, really. But let's go with the first one. Who was your favourite gladiator? If I was to guess for you, someone said to me, who would I say? I would say that your answer would be Lightning.
For the girls, absolutely. Absolutely. She's phenomenal. She still is. Have you seen that woman? My goodness me, she still can do the whole lot. She could walk back into the arena today and blitz it, blitz every event, and whoop everyone's butt big time. Whether she'd want to is another story altogether, but I'd probably think, yeah, she would as well. She'd go right there immediately. Who'd ever want to go up against her? I don't know, some crazy person. But definitely Kim, lightning for the girls, and of course, without bias, has to be James Hunter for the boys. They just became the legends. They became the legends that are gladiators. They were probably the best two athletes in the arena through and through.
What was the most rewarding part of being part of the show?
I think you guys mentioned it earlier on, if you had a chance to kind of affect change in others about body positivity, strength and power for being women, the iconic thing. If any of that went with it, I'm privileged to say thank you, and I'm really happy to have been part of that.
And it looks to me as if both Eunice and Karen are already standing at the foot of our pyramid. Tonight, though, they're facing Jet and Lightning.
The most embarrassing moment for you as a gladiator?
When we did our intros and you come through the little square thing in the middle and they start playing, I got the power. And I'd do like a triple pirouette, double pin my leg, do some funny dad dance thing. And then I would do a round off or aerial cartwheel, aerial cartwheel, aerial cartwheel, or a round off with flip flaps, which usually Kim Lightning would then do. So I'd just do the aerial cartwheels. And I don't know if you remember, my costume was a halter neck for a couple of the years. And then I sort of took the halter neck away. So it was just more like a bra top. And literally both of them... I don't know if it was ever filmed and anybody ever saw it, but I remember thinking, oh, that's them then. And that was it. That was my most embarrassing time, because I do think nippleage came out.
Well, in terms of embarrassment, that would probably rank up very highly in there, absolutely. I think we spoke previously kind of about your memories being a gladiator, but did you ever have any starstruck moments?
Yeah, I think when we did the celebrity... starstruck thing, and oh, my most favourite starstruck moment was with the beautiful, very late Rick Mayall. Remember from the, was it with the Young Ones, and he was a comedian. He was just amazing. And he'd been asked by something like a GQ or FHM magazine, some really posh man mag at the time, with a collection of other famous people to have a really nice photo shoot with their sporting idol. And he, with his, I think his family were very young, with his young family back then, were watching Gladiators on Saturday nights, and he chose me. I couldn't work out why I was his sporting hero. And he just said something really beautiful, like, you know, you were not only a really good athlete on the show, you made it look beautiful. It was an art. You made gladiating look like an art. He said, the whole of my family are big, big fans of the show, and yourself in particular. So I rock up at this hotel room. Sounds salacious, doesn't it? This really lovely hotel room. And we had a really good photo shoot together. He dressed all in black, like a black polo neck. I was looked like Medusa, so I looked like I had his head hanging from my hands, and I was stood gladiatorially over him. And that was a really lovely afternoon to meet one of my idols in terms of comedy and acting, and spent an afternoon having a photo shoot with him, and it was just like mutual rapport. And of course, the tragic thing is, as many years later, he's no longer with us. So to Rick and your family, lots of love always. So that was one of my big starstruck moments. Yeah.
And the final question in this round of questions is, any gladiators from the later series that you wish had been around when you were on the team? I mean, this is quite a common question that we had.
I think, you know, I never really got a chance to work with Jennifer Stout, Rebel. She's gladiatorial as a person to this day, with her energy and her enthusiasm for life and how she infects others and gets people doing amazing things still. I think it would have been really great to maybe share a Powerball pitch with someone like her as one of the members of the team. I'd have loved that. I'd have liked to have seen her in action in the arena in person. See what she was really like. Would she have been any good? Was she a hang tougher? Was she quick at the wall? I don't know. Yeah, I think I'd like to have worked with her.
And she's going to be facing one of this season's new gladiators. It's Rebel!
That Rebel yell goes up because this new gladiator is an Olympic and Commonwealth Games sensation whose achievements are complemented by these superb stats. And from Oni's figures, you can see they're fairly evenly matched.
So moving on to life after Gladiators. Obviously, in the previous episode, we spoke about your injury on Pyramid during the Wembley live shows in 96. I just wanted to kind of cover, like, how did you talk to Nigel or Kenny about your decision not to return to the show? Do you remember that conversation?
Don't think I did. When I left the show after the live event, when I had my neck injury, I was sort of scraped off a crash mat. Lovely Kim and her then fiance, I think they were in the very early days of having met each other, Francis, Kim's husband. They came to see me in hospital. I'd then met who was to become my husband. So I just decided then, you know, the show had got a little too close for comfort in taking something from me, which I valued beyond the Gladiator Arena, and that was to be able to walk. I'm still a big walker, and back then with my lovely former husband, George, we and my dog, Ben, from the Dogs Trust, he was with us for 17 years, beautiful dog, and we just loved doing mountains, Lake District, or, you know, up in the Munros in Scotland. For me, walking, it still is such a big part of my life. If I'd have felt I'd have sold out had I carried on with Glads and then sustained a really serious spinal injury, just so people would go, go on, Jet, which I really appreciated. But no amount of money will buy you a healthy spinal cord if you've lost out to a serious injury. I know many people out there who've sustained injuries for whatever reason fight back with everything they've got to have an even better life, probably. But I had the choice still, and it was at that point I made the choice, and what, you know, I'm out of here. I've done a good four and a half years. I was there at the beginning of the show to establish it. It was at its peak, I felt. And something my dad always left me with is always stop while you're at the top.
Did you get the impression that Nigel and Ken just knew not to put the pressure on you to try and make you return, or literally your contract expired and you just said, not signing it, that's it for me?
I didn't go back. I just didn't. That was it. I think I'd left. I went back. I had a beautiful little maisonette which I'd bought on moving out of London. And I sat on the sofa for about a week thinking, what am I going to do with my life? I mean, I knew I'd go back, be back studying, because I'd been waiting for the time to actually retrain as a psychotherapist, which I did. But I just sat for about a week sort of in my living room going, what on earth just happened? What have I just done? And even my dad, bless him, at the time said, don't burn any bridges. And true enough, I think about three or four years after that, I was just in my first little cottage that I'd bought in a very pretty village called Frensham, down on the Surrey Hampshire border. And the phone was the old-fashioned phone where you could pick the phone up and it was on a curly string. And it was Nigel. I was like, hello, Nigel. Fancy meeting you here. I didn't expect this. He said, I want my jet back. My jet back. And I want to be able to base the whole of the last series on She's Back to say goodbye. I said, Nigel, were you there the day I had my accident? He said, yes, but we could say, for instance, hang tough. He said, we'll try and rig it so you're not doing a high fall at the end. So we'll have the rings much closer to the ground so there's no big impacting fall. And I said, well, that's a nice idea. I said, but I just can't visualise myself being in the arena again. And so I said, no. And it was really sad, actually, because I think months and months later, somebody sent me a little clip from some tabloid paper that said Jet had been axed off Gladiators. I'm like, no, I left because I had a serious accident, and I was asked to go back, but I said no. So somebody spat the dummy out.
And looking back in with hindsight, which is an easy thing to do, if they'd offered you the chance to go back and play a game that was probably almost completely avoidable of injury, so not that any of them were totally like avoidable, but the wall or danger zone, was it just still a definite no, it's not for me?
Yeah, it was a definite no, it's not for me. I think I'd sort of mentally moved on. I had to work quite hard on that, but there was a part of me resented actually being on the show for quite a few years, particularly as I went back to university and started doing my adult education route, because obviously I'd gone back quite late as an adult student by my mid to late 20s. I was starting that route, and there was a much bigger part of me that I wanted to start discovering and exploring in the world, and that was the therapist that I've now been for 20 years, and now I'm teaching other people to become therapists. It's quite a journey, and it was I just wanted to bury the whole Gladiator and being somebody famous very, very quickly, because it just didn't sit with me. It wasn't congruent, it wasn't the biggest most congruent part of me at the time. I had so much more I wanted to do and have gone on to do. So, yeah, had to dissociate, I think, is what I'm trying to say.
Yeah, I was going to say, from knowing you, obviously, at that time and stuff, it did definitely, I could tell that you were distancing yourself from the Gladiators. And I suppose that's what you needed to do to kind of move on with the next stage of your life and stuff like that. But when did it come back around that you were kind of like celebrating your time with the show and being Jet? Like, when did that kind of start to come back into your life a little bit?
To be honest, I think it was many years later after I did the disassociation thing. And as I've got older, I can look back and go, wow, what an amazing show, what an amazing opportunity. And God, I survived it. We all did. And we're all still, my body's broken a lot now, and I've a huge amount of injuries to show for all the many physical aspects of my life. Hence why I do a lot of work on healthy spines with Pilates and still teach, and because I know what it feels like to kind of get older and things stop working as well as they once did. But yeah, I have actually, particularly probably since starting the Gladpod and coming at it from not just a journalistic perspective, but somebody who does ask a lot of questions as a therapist and gives somebody space to really go into things in their lives and look at various aspects of their lives. This, doing this and seeing everybody again, whether they're in front of the camera or behind the camera, and really going back and getting their stories, has just added an extra dimension for me in how much I love and have loved the show and still do, and all that it affords us in terms of those halcyon days and memories and the whole feel-good thing.
And if you could go back and do Glads all over again, would you?
It'd still be no. If there was a guarantee of absolutely not just me not getting hurt, but no one getting hurt, maybe. But the whole nature of the beast was risk. It's what made great TV. It was sensational. Just the most sensational, beautifully done show. As I said, from the lighting designers, Brian Pierce, to Jonathan Glazier, you know, doing all the camera angles in the balcony, in the you know, director's balcony, from makeup artist to Stephen Adnett in our little wee costumes, and they were everybody that made this huge beast roll and travel the way that it did into people's lives every Saturday night is just a real privilege. But yeah, if it was guaranteeable that there'd be no one hurt, then maybe. But otherwise, no. I'd present it.
And she's going to be hanging tough against Jet.
Jet, a great favourite. Gymnast, dancer, presenter, and a conspirist, it seems. Looks in good shape to me, but up there, as I just said, it don't mean a thing if you ain't got that swing.
So, talking about never gladiating again, back when you first became a radio host, which you mentioned earlier, I don't know if you remember, but you used to play a game on air called The Danger Zone, which was basically quickfire questions with your listeners to win prizes. Di, I want to turn the tables on you and have you run The Danger Zone with me and David, firing questions at you. I'm afraid there's no prizes, and I won't be asking you to slip on your jet lycra, but maybe, depending on how well you do, I could dig out something gladiatorial for my parents' loft. So, will you be willing to take on the challenge of The Danger Zone?
I am willing to take on the challenge of The Danger Zone.
Hand tough or the wall?
Hand tough.
Biggest regret?
Oh, accident.
Celebrity crush?
Oh, gosh. I can't tell you that.
What does a wooga mean?
Oh, it's something like come on, or power or strength or something like that.
Who is your idol?
Sandy Totskvig, actually.
Favourite pizza topping?
Oh, just your regular... No, pepperoni.
Lycra or lingerie?
Lycra.
Favourite series of The Gladiators?
Series 2.
Dodgiest gift from a fan?
Oh, I think knickers.
Weirdest thing you've signed?
Someone's arm who then got it tattooed. Their forearm.
Out of time. There's so many questions on there. There was one that I'm going to have to ask purely because of how good it is. But apparently you were born on a stormy Friday the 13th night, and the midwife announced to your mum, "You've got a beautiful son, Mrs. Udale." Is that true?
It's true.
The oracle strikes again.
Thank you, everybody. you know, for sending in questions. Keep them coming. There's pretty much no place out of bounds for me to talk about.
So if you have got a question for Di, or you can make it out to Jet, you know the ways of getting in touch with us by now. But if you don't, here they are. gladpod@gladiatorstv.com. We're also on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. Great to be back. So pleased that we've got this second series. With what Paul's got lined up, I really think we're going to have a great few weeks now interviewing a whole host of people. From what Paul's got down, it's going to be a whole range. We're going to really go on a bit more of a journey here, and I'm really excited, and I can't wait for you to hear it all. And Di has left the Zoom meeting. It becomes very, it always becomes very official when someone has left the Zoom meeting. But now, Paul, that means that you and I can talk about our chat with Di, which I know that the outros are often her favourite part of each of our Glad Pods. But two episodes speaking all things Jet. It must have been your dream.
Yeah, it certainly was, David. I mean, it was such an honour and a role reversal to be interviewing Jet as well. I was actually asked to be on Jet Video Profile back in the day, but as a kid, I was way too nervous to even think about taking part in it. So it's been a nice tribute, hopefully, to that video that I definitely know a lot of the fans have played over the years. I'm sure there's still a lot more to uncover that the fans want to know from Jet. So if you've got any further questions or anything that we've missed, please do let us know.
Yeah, because we've now, it's kind of really, I would say, four episodes with Di, because we obviously had the first two in series one, but the first episode was really more about what she wants to get out of the podcast, more talking about the podcast. And then the second episode, Di and I just, you know, the time flew by so quickly. We really didn't get into as much as we perhaps wanted to. And I know for you, it was very much a case of wanting just to revisit that, to ask more questions, that just dig a little bit deeper.
Exactly. I think the amazing thing is with Di is that she's such a good interviewer and she's so good at getting the information out of other people. It takes a little bit more to get it out of herself, to talk about herself. She's such a humble person in that way. So I just loved how she was so open and wanted to discuss like some difficult subjects as well, especially about how she felt when she was a young girl, wasn't ready for a gymnastics career to be over, and everything that kind of came with that was just really fascinating to hear as a fan.
Do you think, Paul, that if we'd had the same chat in the series one, do you think she would have been as open as she has been with these two episodes? Because you're right, she doesn't often talk about or enjoy talking about herself. She does get very uncomfortable about it. But because we've been on this journey so far, and she has actually, during other people's chats, revealed more about her experiences from Gladiators connected to whoever we're speaking with. So do you think that she perhaps was a bit more open this time round because of just perhaps feeling a bit more comfortable in the Glad Pod arena?
Yeah, I think so. And I think even for us to be able to ask some of the questions as well, like not only for Diane to be comfortable enough to answer them, but for us to kind of ask some of the more difficult questions. Yeah, I'm sure that she definitely is more comfortable because of just the experiences of what she's gone through with everybody else talking and chatting to the other gladiators about their experiences. I think, yeah, she definitely feels more comfortable, I would say.
And as Paul says, if you've got any questions that you would like to ask Di, because I'm sure we haven't covered everything that we'd want to know from Jet in these episodes, then do get in touch, gladpod@gladiatorstv.com. And we'll be back with our first new, fresh chat in this series in 2 weeks. So we'll see you then.
Good competition, good spirit, great sportsmanship as both contenders show mutual respect. Join us again next week for the ultimate challenge, the might of...